Good morning, everybody. This is Frank Riccio, and I will be hosting the show this morning. This is Talking About the Law. It focuses on cutting-edge issues on the law, and my focus today is going to be on medical malpractice and health law. Also, I should note that this show is brought to you by the law offices of Frank J. Riccio in Braintree, Massachusetts. The Riccio Law Firm concentrates in serious medical and dental malpractice cases. We are conveniently located off the highway in Braintree. Our phone number is 781-380-4373. Our website is www.frankjriccio.com. Today, our topic is obstetrical malpractice, and we are fortunate to have as our guest attorney Ken Levine. Ken is located in Brookline. His website is www.klevine.com. And Ken is an accomplished trial lawyer who focuses his practice on medical malpractice cases involving birth injuries. He has been practicing for over 32 years. He practices not only in Massachusetts, but is also practices in other jurisdictions throughout the country. I'm very happy and honored to have Ken here today. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you very much for asking me to come.
First of all, what type of obstetrical cases does your firm handle?
Well, many, but the two most principal ones are children who suffer brain damage at birth because they've lacked oxygen. And the second one is babies that sometimes get stuck in the birth canal with a situation called shoulder dystocia, and they end up with a serious injury to one of their arms.
And
those are typical.
What is shoulder dystocia?
Well, everybody has a pelvis. We all have a bony pelvis, men and women. When a baby's in the uterus with the mom, it has to navigate through this bony pelvis to get delivered. Babies do it every day. Women deliver babies safely all the time. Babies rotate through this bony pelvis and out through delivery. But once in a while, sometimes because babies are big, they don't navigate the bony pelvis very well and they get stuck. So the head delivers, but the body doesn't follow. Now at that point, if doctors aren't careful, and if they pull too hard on the baby's heads, they can cause severe damage to the baby.
And what type of damage typically happens to the baby?
Well, with those types of cases where there's a shoulder dystocia, which just means shoulder being stuck, if the doctors pull too hard on the baby's heads, they can tear nerves that run through the spinal column to our arms, and that can affect a child's ability to use their arms, either one of their arms, permanently.
And does that often require some type of surgical procedure after the baby is delivered, if that is a problem?
It does. You know, in the most, there are different degrees. I mean, some kids have a stretch of this brachial plexus bundle of nerves, which sometimes heals on its own. But there are many kids where the nerves are actually torn from the spinal column or they're torn in the middle. And those kids who are most severely injured, they do require sometimes three surgeries to try to help them. And they, even with the surgeries, they'll never get back full movement. They'll always have some permanent injury and some physical deformity. And the surgeries will help them to some degree.
Now, is a shoulder dystocia always caused by negligence?
No, the shoulder dystocia itself is not caused by a doctor's negligence. That is caused by the baby's size, usually. Usually it's big babies who don't navigate the birth canal very well. They don't navigate this bony pelvis very well. So the doctors don't cause the shoulder dystocia itself. The problem is the management of it once it's recognized. It's not difficult for doctors to recognize that the baby has this condition during delivery. They're trained in medical school to recognize it. But when they do see that the baby is stuck, that's when they've got to calm down. They've got to be very careful and make sure they don't pull too hard down on the baby's head. So that's where the mistake comes in.
Are there certain criteria that obstetricians and nurse midwives use to ascertain whether a child is going to be a high risk for shoulder dystocia?
Absolutely. One is ultrasound can be used to estimate the baby's size. And we're talking about big babies. This can happen even with small babies. Sometimes if a mom is short or if the pelvis just happens to be shaped in a certain way, it can happen. But we see it a lot with large babies. So knowing the estimated weight of the baby is one way. They also, during ultrasound, can measure the baby's head size and also the baby's chest size. The head should be the biggest part of the baby, because if the head navigates through the pelvis, then the body will follow. But once in a while on the ultrasound, we see the body is actually bigger than the head. Sometimes that's caused by a condition called gestational diabetes, which comes with pregnancy and causes the kids to store extra fat through their neck and their shoulders. So if a doctor sees that a woman is diabetic, she has a big baby, the circumference of the chest is bigger than the head, these are all factors that should cause the doctor to go to the mom and say, you know, you're at risk for this, and we could do a cesarean section to avoid this happening, and let's talk about your options and see what the best way is for your delivery.
Now, if somebody was to come to your office with a child who had an injury to their arm and it was a question of shoulder dystocia, how would your office screen that case to determine whether or not there's, in fact, a lawsuit to be brought?
Oh, sure, yeah. And like I said, this is one part. The other cases that we see quite a lot of are the cases where during labor and delivery, when the baby's on this fetal heart monitor, showing the baby's heart rate dropping and the physician not reacting quickly enough to it so the baby's lack oxygen, those kids end up with brain damage. And those are the other types of cases we see pretty often also.
And we're gonna get into that. What I do want to do is I want to be able to kind of just, somebody comes to you with a shoulder dystocia case.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you do?
First thing we do is we have to get the medical record. The medical records will tell us a lot by what's in the record and also what's not in the record. Sometimes, as you know from your own work, what you don't see is quite important also. So the first thing is we have the clients help us get the medical record. And then we have two obstetrical nurses in my firm who then initially review the record to see what's in there and give us a factual background. And then we'll sit down and talk about the case and see if there are the factors we would look for in order to take the case.
And what factors do you look for in a shoulder dystocia case?
Well, we want to see are there real issues two different ways. In the first place, are there real issues medically that should have warned the physician that this serious condition could occur in pregnancy? Should this mom have been given the option of cesarean section? And sometimes we do find that. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's just a matter of not really having a risk for it, but it's still happening. So then we're looking at the delivery. And what does the delivery note tell us? Was there too much pulling on the head? How long was the delivery? How big was the baby? What kind of help did they call for in the room? And also, of course, how bad is the baby's injury?
And do you need at some point in time to have the case evaluated by experts to determine whether or not there's been a breach of the standard of care?
Absolutely. And it's a very important question, because I think there's a misconception in the general public. There's a misconception, I think, that lawyers create malpractice cases. We don't. And I actually tell people early on when they come to see us that early on, the lawyer is not the most important person. It's the medical experts who are most important. Because unless we can find board-certified competent physicians who can review the record for us and explain to us what the mistakes were, we can't take the case. And that's the fail-safe that I think people don't really understand. We don't create the cases. We work them through to find the experts to help us support the case. And only then can we actually take the case.
And how does economics play a role in this, if anything, in terms of costliness?
Well, it's a big issue. For example, obtaining medical records is very expensive, firstly. Secondly, experts who are very competent and qualified have their own practices. So to have them take away time from their own work to review medical records costs money as well. And one of the jobs that the nurses do in a firm like mine is to make sure that we separate out potential cases from cases that we don't think are cases at all. So this is, again, something I think people don't really understand. which is good to know, is that we probably only take maybe one out of every 20 cases that we look at.
That's about 5%.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, most of the time, we will get the records, we'll review them, and then we'll have to explain to the family that even though there might have been an injury, the doctor was not at fault and that we can't take the case.
Interesting, because that's consistent with my practice as well.
Absolutely.
We take about 5%, and the screening process, as you know, is pretty rigorous. And
has to be.
In terms of taking a case, they are costly because there are a lot of – all of these cases are taken in a contingency fee.
Right.
And there are a lot of costs associated with the cases. So in terms of the vigorous screening, how vigorous or rigorous are you with your experts in terms of making sure it's a case that you really want to take forward?
Well, we are, and there are a lot of factors. Obviously, we can't take every case, same in your practice, and we have to first see that there's an injury that's substantial enough to be able to go forward. But, meeting with the experts and speaking to the experts takes time, and we do push the experts sometimes, too, to make sure that their opinions are really sound.
And when we come back, we're going to explore this a little bit further, and then we're going to talk about some policy reasons as well. Thank you.